it seems more and more athletes are comfortable being candid, giving not canned answers and perspective to things that's going on in their sport. That just democratizes the information out there. I think it's great when you see athletes interacting on Twitter directly with fans. I mean, there's some pros and cons. So in terms of how the content is being pressed out, like there's no reason that there can't be room for both Stephen A. and athletes pushing out their own version of content.
We Need to Be Doing That, a podcast that combines sports, social media, content, and life. I'm Jonah Ballo.
I'm Keith Steckler.
I'm Elliot Gerard.
We Need to Be Doing That is a Heartland Group production.
Come on. We need to be doing that.
We're really excited. Joe Caparoso, my fellow mule and president of Team Whistle, which is a DAZN group company, is here to talk about all the things he's done in his amazing career and what he's up to with Whistle.
Sounds great. Thank you guys for having me.
You have a really interesting, you know, way that you got to Whistle. So I'd love to kind of like start at the beginning. You know, I don't know if we have to get into Muhlenberg College and how it's, you know, the best baby Ivy out there, but we can talk about, you know, your journey into this position. And
well, listen, we love the Centennial Conference in Allentown, Pennsylvania, of course. can't go wrong there. I went to Muhlenberg from 2005 to 2009. An eternity ago, played D3 football, shout out there. Nice. I majored in media and comms and political science. And I think at the time I wanted to try to be like a lobbyist or something like that. Cause I got my master's in political science at Lehigh, like a 1-year program after that. And my first job was actually with United Way. I was doing like nonprofit fundraising, and I was up in Westchester at United Way of, is Westchester and Putnam. And throughout college and kind of like during that time, I was working on, you know, like my own sort of like blog and Twitter and podcasting, talking about sports, talking about the Jets. And, you know, I kind of kept doing that on the side. You know, I bounced over from United Way to AOL Patch for a short period of time. And after things wound down there, I saw a job for Whistle. And at the time, Whistle was like, I don't know, like a 9-person company. It was predominantly a .com website and like a YouTube MCN network. So I got a job there as like an editor, effectively like a writer for the website, and to help them start building social media. And that was in 2013. So now I'm in year 11 of being here. And basically what happened is like a lifer. Now somehow I'm 37 and still here just like that. Basically built out our social media team and department, got us up and running on sort of our own publisher handles over time. You know, we grew, we invested in more in being our own publisher, our own IP, built out a sales team, went through, you know, Series A, Series B, Series C, Series D, acquired a couple other small companies throughout the years that kind of expanded out some of the agency and studio work we were doing. We're lucky enough to be able to navigate COVID and stay above water. And kind of during this time, my role sort of expanded to be all of our content, not just our social media. And post-COVID, we got acquired by 11, which is a sort of a global rights holding company, very big in Portugal, Belgium, you know, a handful of other European and Asian countries. And after about being owned for them for about a year, 11 got acquired by DAZN, inclusive of Team Whistle. And that's been also about a year now in the past where we've settled into being sort of a key U.S. hub for DAZN, which is, you know, a massive global rights holder and has a huge presence, you know, all over the world, Germany, Spain, Italy, Japan, now Portugal, Belgium, with the 11 acquisition. And it has a very big, robust boxing business in the U.S., among a few other things. So we you know, we're plugging into that as a domestic presence with good relationships with all the social platforms and different brands. And most of what we drive on is, you know, how do we make positive and relatable content brand safe? You know, we do a lot of evergreen storytelling. It's not stats and news and analysis. It's how do we tell stories that brands are happy to integrate with? And most of what we drive our revenue through is through larger branded content activations. And now we're trying to migrate that skill set and expertise throughout the wider DAZN group and combine that with some of the rights holder relationships that they have. They have NFL GPI rights, basically, and the rest of the world outside of the U.S., you know, deals with Bundesliga, Serie A, F1. So how do we utilize that and add our capabilities to the mix? So it's been an eventful run, to put it lightly, but it's definitely, I've learned a lot. Probably I learned more, I would say, in the past two and a half years than I would say I did in the 5-6 years before that. Just working through some of the things that come with integration and trying to like scale what you do on a global scale has been very informative and interesting. So that was a very long, long-winded answer, but that's roughly how I am, how I got to where I am right now.
Well, that's, I mean, it's really interesting to think that, like, you know, I mean, while 2005 was forever ago, the fact how fast we've gone from there, you know, you getting into the blog space, which honestly at that point, yes, there were blogs before that, but like 2005 was like, it was like the, you know, it was like the Stone Age, for that. And like how fast that, that has, it seems like you've rode that wave, you know, and continue to do so, especially with, you know, working for a DAZN company, which is on the front end of all of these things, whatever, you know, the content, it seems like they're, whether it's streaming or, you know, social content or whatever, they're getting ahead of it. What do you see the difference in, like, you know, going from just like the blogging space to the social space, which seemed at the time very fast and very complex? That seems like, like I said, the Stone Age.
Yeah, it's been interesting watching leagues and publishers adapt in real time to how all this content is consumed and distributed and coming to peace with the terms of how certain stuff is just going to hit YouTube and hit social and how highlights are going to be passed around and how sports fans are just like different now. You know, I'm even like aged out of a certain type of sports fan where, you know, you're a huge fan of a specific team. You watch every second of every game that they play. And whereas I feel like Gen Z sports fandom is much more player-centric, highlight-centric, maybe you don't watch all 82 NBA games. You're just like a Steph Curry fan. And you're just kind of like casually following his highlights through TikTok and YouTube shorts. And like, that's how you consume basketball. And it's been interesting watching the leagues kind of evolve and develop and also look at how do we, you know, how do we strategically partner with different digital creators and different people who are making creative, interesting formats and content to help get the word out about our league. And that's not traditional marketing. That's not traditional distribution. And I think most of the general space has evolved in the right way to adapt to that. After maybe some like push and pull of like, how do we keep all this stuff off social media? How do we keep everything in a more traditional model? I just don't think that's like practical anymore. And now you have this other evolution where you're seeing different, everyone is getting involved in sort of the rights bidding business. There's football on Amazon, there's tennis and racing and boxing on Netflix. It's just interesting watching how the rights continue to evolve and get distributed in different places.
Cam Newton had like an interesting quote the other day about how, you know, he respected people like Stephen A. Smith and there's still a role for them, you know, in this day and age, but it's athlete driven content, like really raw athlete driven content. And like, I've been listening to, you know, some of these podcasts, like the Roommates podcast with Brunson and Hart, and like how like authentic these stories are, you know, coming directly from them, and how they're so much better versed than they used to be in telling those. I even Cam Newton, like he's really become something. He started a whole, you know, new career in the podcasting network. So what are your thoughts on that? You know, an athlete created content.
I think it's been great to see that there's such a higher volume of it. It seems more and more athletes are comfortable being candid and giving not canned answers and perspective to thing that's going on in their sport. And that just democratizes the information out there. I think it's great when you see athletes interacting on Twitter directly with fans. I mean, there's some pros and cons to it, but in terms of how the content is being pressed out, like there's no reason that there can't be room for both Stephen A and athletes pushing out their own version of content. I mean, they're just going to serve different purposes and in different lanes. Athletes are going to have a certain perspective from, you know, playing in real time in a lot of these events. It's not even ex-athletes anymore. It's guys who are like currently playing. It's still good to have reporters and analysts and whoever also who are not directly in it offering their perspective and their analysis. So you're getting both. And I think there's room for both. And some people are going to gravitate towards more to one than the other. But I think it's just more content for fans and more options for fans. And it's never been easier to get this stuff out there. Like you set up a mic, you flip on Riverside, and like these athletes could like crank this stuff out. They can just do it from their phone, right? I mean, on the road, like it's practical now for guys like Brunson and Hart to be full-time NBA players, but still have a podcast because all you're doing is having a conversation. And there's an audience for that level of access and relatability. And it's an interesting other lane of content distribution.
And I feel like helps that casual fan, like you're saying, the ones that like maybe you're not watching all the games, but you're consuming this content in a different way, which like you said, like the leagues are figuring it out. I mean, I saw an interview with Adam Silver the other day about how TikTok and these things are just as important as the, you know, as the major cable or whatever streaming wars that they're going on with their contracts with them as well.
Yeah, no, the leagues have to find a way to make their peace with the social platforms. And look, there's other ways where they can be like, look how much our viewership has spiked, because we know what we're counting all the viewership we're getting on YouTube and TikTok. So that's people watching our rights and watching our content. Those are also other ways for them to integrate brands and make more money themselves if they're smart about how they leverage it. So it's just more distribution. It's more people watching content in more places. That's just not the traditional, you know, Nielsen rating from television households, but it should be an opportunity for leagues. And the NBA has done a good job of leaning into that and letting people proliferate those highlights everywhere, because that's what drives such worldwide interest in the sport. And I don't think it's ever been more popular globally than it is right now.
Those measurable moments, right, whether they be on social or on broadcast, how are the brands and the sponsors sort of pivoting or navigating that space to where to put the dollars? Because like you just said, and that was exactly where I was going to go and ask the question of, if I'm a brand and I'm a sponsor or I want a commercial spot, yes, the NBA is telling me, look at the metrics on social, they're great, but then the story is not the same on traditional broadcast. Do you feel there hasn't been that evolution yet where it's kind of, they both kind of caught up to each other? It seems they're a little bit amiss at the moment. Maybe we're just going through the growing pains of that, but where the sponsors can really find the critical point where they could put their dollars to.
I mean, look, I think brands are getting smart and evolving with this. I think you're seeing a lot of packages that include elements of linear and social distribution, because if you're working with the right company, there's a way to get coverage in all these places. Can you, and we try to push ourselves into this. Can you find a company that can make you a linear spot that's usable, but also make you vertical assets off that shoot that you could run on Instagram Reels, YouTube Shorts, and TikTok? So you could capture that entire audience. And I think smart brands and smart media buyers can swim in both pools at once across one deal. And companies that have the internal muscles to do both of those things, especially in like one shoot and one shoot day or with one type of athlete or influencer, are going to be at an advantage, because ideally any type of campaign you're buying is going to reach as wide of an audience as possible. And to do that, look, you're still going to want, there's going to be certain situations where you want certain linear assets that are still running at halftime of a game or in between quarters in a game. But you also have to have a version of that that can be 6 seconds and be 15 seconds and can be reshared by the athlete and three influencers who know the athlete to get the full audience. So you have to have packages and campaigns that are comprehensive enough. And that's on the company to be able to execute that and not, you know, have to only be able to do a part of it. And also on brands and media buyers to be open-minded and a little more outside the box than traditional media packages were.
I find the streaming wars fascinating. The start of it, obviously, Blockbuster, Netflix, Even HBO were first of the game in as far as creating the type of shows like we saw with The Sopranos, and Netflix with the technology really, I think, won that battle against Blockbuster because they had something that served the audience what you want to see, what you might like, and it was sort of a different experience. But I'm fascinated at where we go now, especially DAZN becoming such a big player in the space, but not specifically to them. The conglomerates have to figure out a way to, you know, get one platform that is going to be the Apple with all the shows, or is one company going to swoop in and take up all of these other content shows and live streaming? It seems like a crowded space, a little oversaturated and a little like separated. Do you see that ever kind of consolidating?
I mean, it's always interesting to see the bundling and then unbundling and then rebundling.
We're back to cable, right?
Yeah. Back to a version of cable with how some of these different things are consolidating and how rights are getting bought up. I think having some elements of competition is a good thing. I hope there is not too much mass consolidation of everything. You do want consumers to have some different options. It's just how do these things that are being aggregated get priced in a way that doesn't all of a sudden have you paying way more than what you were paying for your like historic, you know, cable bundle? Are there smart ways where certain things can be folded in or aggregated? And how do you make the process, you know, as seamless as possible to get your sports, like regardless of where you live? Like it shouldn't be that hard or that complicated, you know, to find Thursday night football or to find a Rams game if you're not in their market. So I think there's still a lot that has to be kind of sorted out. I'm curious to see how much backlash is if there's too much consolidation and like price centralization in one place. But I do think all you're going to continue to see from the leagues is that it's a huge opportunity for them that they can cut that pie up in so many more different pieces now as right deals come up. It's not just CBS and NBC and Fox who are bidding on those rights. You now have companies like us, you have Netflix, you have Amazon, you have Disney, more and more different ways that you can cut it up to distribute rights, which, you know, for people who own rights, that's a valuable situation for them. So to see how they manage that is going to be interesting. And then you'll have leagues like the NFL that they're only going to continue to push for more output and more games. You know, I don't think we're far away from a world where there's 18, 19 games in a season and maybe an extra bye week factored in. And it's a true, like almost, it already is like a year-round sport with how the combine's covered and how drafts covered. But they're just, it's going to be a bigger international slate, more games, more weeks, and that's more rights to sell. And that's a game on Thursday. Is there eventually a game on Friday to go with Monday? Like they've already tested this. Yeah. Doing like two Monday night games at once, and one's on ESPN and one's here. Like there's only going to be more of that. I think the NFL will need a lot of that as well.
You know, Netflix is trying to do stuff. Tyson fight. I mean, I'm probably going to watch him on Netflix. You know, I have Netflix. He likes to do some crazy fights, which, you know, you guys have definitely done great stuff with him in the past, but this one seems a little different. I don't know. Maybe just because it's Tyson.
Yeah, anything with Tyson associated with it always feels a bit different and a bit unique. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out and like how good the product is and what the turnout and the interest level is in it. And it's, as a general sports fan, it's great to see more and more people like experimenting with different things and trying different events. And the more things that can round out a calendar for a sports fan, you know, the better. And I think there's other iterations of some of these like events and niche sports that are only going to get bigger that will also complement the major sports and the major upcoming events, you know, with Olympics this year and everything else that will, you know, be going on in the years after that. So it's a, you know, if you like sports and you like consuming sports content, there's never been more ways to do that, which I think is a good thing generally.
For women's sports, what has Whistle sort of focused on? And there's been such a boom in that area that has been underserved for a long time. It's been overdue, right? And we're seeing the astronomical numbers. We have superstars in college ranks, pros, and just more coverage. And the audience is telling all of us they want it. They want more. So the investment's now coming. It's been too late. But from your perspective, what have you seen in that space?
It's been really awesome and fascinating to watch over the past couple of years, the spike up. We really started noticing it last year around Women's World Cup because we do a lot of good work around temples. We always see sort of a spike up in our work around temples, but this one in particular around women's sports was really a huge jump in opportunities to make content, to make branded content, to get access, and brand interest was at a different level for women's sports that I hadn't seen. And now that wave has kind of been ridden by what's going on with women's college basketball, you know, led by Caitlin Clark, led by what happened in the tournament last year with how fascinating that Final Four was with the championship, with her and Angel Reese going back and forth. And it feels like in many ways, like people are more excited about the women's tournament than the men's tournament. Yep,
100%.
I'd say that.
Crazy. If you would have told any of us that 10 years ago, we wouldn't have believed you. And it really does feel like it's getting to that point. And all it takes is, you know, a couple stars, a couple storylines, a couple faces, and they've really captured something here where the interest in the events is real. You see people lined up outside the door to go to these games. The interest in the content and social is real. We see just as much, if not more, engagement on stuff we put on Instagram related to women's basketball and women's soccer than to the men's sports. And it's been fun to watch, and it's I hope it only continues to grow. I think the Olympics being this year will help too, because there'll be a lot of prominent female athletes that will, you know, get to watch all summer as well after the tournament ends. And hopefully that momentum just keeps building.
I can relate to your career a little bit in terms of the trajectory and the time period as far as social. When I started with the Minnesota Timberwolves, like, Twitter just started. And I was like, it's fascinating that, you know, I'd write articles and create content and just hope that people go to the website. Like, there's no distribution method to get them out. But I'm interested for you, and I've talked to a lot of, you know, younger kids now growing up in this different era, and I feel old when I do this every time. But what advice would you have to somebody who's in the younger generation wanting to get into content, wanting to get into the space that the career that you've carved out, what would you offer to them?
I think the more you can do, the better. And you have to be open-minded, especially as you get started. Like, you might have a very specific type of job in your mind, but you got to be open to trying and learning different things as you get yourself integrated. And over the course of a few years, you'll find the way to the right spot. We have a girl who works for our company who also went to Muhlenberg, and you know, she started out as an intern maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And she was just doing like a mix of like social programming and Twitter and like a lot of like basic sort of entry programming work. And over the course of a few years, she, you know, sort of found her niche of being an on-camera talent. And now she's one of our hosts. She's all over all of our social platforms. We sent her to Super Bowl, we'll send her to the Olympics. And that wasn't day one. You know, she didn't start day one as a host for us, but a few years in now, like, she's an influencer who's an in-house influencer us and who gets to go out and cover all these events. And I just think you have to be a little patient, a little open-minded. The more platforms you're comfortable with managing, making content for, having some basic editing chops, like for video and social, I think is important, even if that's not your main function. You just want to know your way around this stuff and feel comfortable. How do you record a podcast? Oh, I know how to do that. You know, how do you post on TikTok? I know how to do that too. Great. Like, we'll find something for you to do if you can do that. And the more you can do, the better off you're going to be, because it is like, there's plenty of interesting companies out there right now if you have the right flexibility and experience.
Yeah, it's a diversity of skills, right? Like, you can't just be a specialist really in one thing. I've noticed that as well.
Yes, 100%.
All right. I think we got to talk about this Jets podcast. So do you Amen. Let it go? Is there a ranting podcast against your team, or how critical can you get?
I could be very critical. I say that, you know, some people like golf or bowl as a hobby. In their spare time, my spare time hobby is yelling about the Jets like a deranged maniac, right? So for me, it's a nice like outlet to talk about the team. I was there in the building when Rodgers got hurt last year. Just an unbelievable thing when you really take a step back and get a little further from it after all the hype. Yeah, I mean, that to happen twice really in like 20 years. And listen, I'm hoping he's healthy. I'm hoping he's can play four more years like he says he can.
Yeah.
I'll take 2 years, 1 year, 2 years of him being healthy at this
stage. I love how he broke it on like some small podcast that no one's ever heard of before.
Yeah, he's got interesting media touring.
Yeah. When is he gonna be on yours? He's gotta be on your podcast.
One of these days, if I could chase him around somewhere in New Jersey or around the facility, I'm trying to go into next year with tempered optimism. I think if he's healthy and they still have the defense they had last year, like, you know, it could be like a 500 plus team.
It's been a blast having you on. I would love to, you know, if you want to plug anything, you know, if you want to talk about anything at Whistle that's coming up, and also like where we can find you on social.
Sure. No, this has been great. I'm always happy to riff about this stuff. You can follow Whistle all over social. Our biggest platforms are our YouTube channel, which is just Whistle Sports on YouTube. It's Whistle Sports on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, TikTok. Those are all the main handles, and they're all branded up with the Whistle Sports. And of course, make sure you're following DAZN everywhere on social as well. We've been getting our hands on a lot more of that work going forward. So I'm sure we've hopefully popped up in all of your guys' feeds. Just thank you. Thanks to the algorithm if we're doing our job right. And I'm just on Twitter at Jay Caparoso. So this is great. I'm always happy to talk sports media, Muhlenberg, Jets. These are all my favorite topics.
That's a wrap for this week. Thanks for listening to the We Need to Be Doing That podcast. Visit WeNeedToBeDoingThat.com for more episodes and contact information.